As soon as he said the words, they knew exactly what Jesus was talking about. It's kind of funny when you think about it, because we don't respond the way the disciples did when Jesus said those words for the very first time. When Jesus said, "Let not your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you, and if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again to receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also." Really, when we hear those words, we think about one of two events. Sometimes when we hear those words, we think about an evangelistic encounter. We think about sharing with someone what it means to know Christ, to anticipate heaven, to know that you're forgiven, and you're ready to go. But the truth is, most of the time when we hear those words, we think about a particular setting and a particular event that is taking place. Most of the time we think about those words in the context of a funeral. When we remember that someone has seen God's promise fulfilled in their lives, and that they have received everything that the Lord had promised to them. I used that passage just a week ago in a funeral service. But when Jesus gathered with his apostles in the upper room and he began to say those words, they had a very different reaction. When they heard what Jesus was saying, they immediately thought about a very different event. They thought about a wedding. When Jesus quoted those words that we read together a while ago, he was describing a custom that was very familiar to them all. It was about a man and a woman entering into a covenant relationship of marriage, one that would bind them together as husband and wife. Now, the principles that Jesus applied still apply to a marriage today. Most of the customs they followed are not familiar to us, but the principles are timeless, just as effective now as they ever were. And at our church, because we are committed to growing healthy families, and a healthy family always begins with the two people who are at the very center of that family, a husband and a wife, we need to look together at these principles from John 14 and discover exactly what the Bible is telling us about how a man and how a woman join their lives together and live out a lifetime of real commitment through Christ. So let's jump in together. And the first thing that you see here is the foundation of a marriage is a sacred declaration of commitment. In the days of Christ, they didn't do things the way we do. In our day, when a man and a woman get engaged, they do it one of two ways. One is they find a very private place where they can be alone, just the two of them, and he will kneel before his bride, and he will propose, and she will accept. Maybe, just maybe, there'll be a few family, special friends hiding in the bushes, watching that event take place. Now, that's one way you get engaged. The other way you get engaged is you go to some kind of stadium somewhere and you flash it up on a big screen and hope to goodness she doesn't say no. But in the time of Christ, it was a very different kind of thing. In the time of Christ, a bridegroom began the process of preparing for marriage by declaring publicly his intention to marry his chosen bride. He would stand before the whole village and declare to everyone, "This is the woman that God has given to me. This is the woman I intend to marry. And I just want everybody in town to know that's the girl for me." Now, it'd be a long time before they would come together as husband and wife, but that declaration was considered to be a binding commitment. He would stand up in front of everybody and he would say, "I've already entered into negotiations with her father." Now, nowadays we ask for a blessing or for permission. Those days you negotiated the settlement of what exactly was going to be involved during the wedding, during the marriage. It was the equivalent of an engagement period, except it was much more serious than that. In fact, It was generally considered that from that moment, the two were considered to be a married couple, even though the wedding still lay in the future. You see that example in Mary and Joseph and the story of the birth of Christ, when the Bible talks about the fact that he was betrothed to Mary, but they'd not come together yet. It was still that time when he had announced his intentions, but it hadn't begun to be fulfilled. That's what's going on. Joseph has already stood before the people in the village. He has already said, "This is the woman that I intend to marry." And from that moment forward, they were considered to be betrothed, married, although they had not come together in a wedding yet. Jesus offered his declaration when he stated, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me." What was Jesus saying? Jesus was saying, "I am making a promise. You can count on this. You can trust it. You can trust me. You can depend upon me. Nothing's going to change. From this time forward, I want you to know you can believe in me. You can trust me." It was his own personal invitation to become a part of the bride of Christ. And a declaration of commitment also required a response. The bridegroom shared his love and received a personal commitment from his beloved. The bridegroom would say, "Here's the woman I've chosen." And then the bride would say, "I am ready to be your wife." Today, the declaration of commitment continues to be an important part of a Christian marriage. I want you to think together about this very idea that says, "You can count on me. You can depend upon me. I will always be there for you. I will never leave you behind. I will always, always be committed to you." That's something that needs to be said constantly in the context of a Christian marriage. You're required to say it first at a wedding. There'll come that point where you say, "I make my commitment. I take you to be my wedded husband. I take you to be my wedded wife. I commit my life to you." But that's just the beginning. The Lord expects you to live it out and express it for a lifetime to come. A thriving marriage is always built upon a single understanding. And that understanding is the same whether you've been married a month or a year or 10 years or 40 years or 60 years. And it is simply this: if I had to do it over again, I would still choose you. You know, maybe that's what I ought to make you do this morning. Those of you who are here with your bride or your bridegroom, maybe it's time for you to look at each other and say, "If I had to do it over again, I would still choose you." Yeah. So go ahead and do it. I've got time. Go right ahead. Just look them right in the eye. "If I had to do it over again, I would still choose you." I don't hear a lot of murmuring going on out here. I'm a little bit concerned. Here's my question for you. So is it better, does it feel better to say the words or to hear the words? Which is better? To be able to say to someone you love, "I choose you, I chose you, I choose you, I'm going to choose you tomorrow." Or to hear that from the lips of someone you trust and love. The truth is, you need both things, don't you? Why are we called to choose one another again and again and again? I remember hearing the story about the woman who said, "You know, we've been married 25 years and you never tell me I love you." And her husband said, "I told you the day we got married, and if I change my mind, I'll tell you then." Why is it important that we show our love and our commitment again and again and again? That's where faithfulness and trust find their foundation. Just like Jesus said to us, "Believe in God, believe in me." You could believe me yesterday. You can believe me today. You'll be able to believe me tomorrow and into eternity. In the same way, we say the same thing to one another. That's part of that declaration of commitment that says, I am committed to you. And that's where it all begins. Now, in Jesus' day, a declaration of intention leads to a season of preparation. Jesus told his disciples, in my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. That's step number two in the process back in Jesus' day. Once a young man declared his desire to be the husband of his bride, there was something he had to do. And until he had done it, nothing could proceed. Until he was finished, everything was at a standstill. You know what he had to do? The bridegroom had to provide his bride with a place to live. With a place to live. Now, in Jesus' day, things were a lot different than they are today. Today, a young couple gets engaged, they look toward being married, and they know one of the things we've got to have is a place to live. And so he gets out and he begins to scour. If he's wise, he asks her opinion along the way. And you might look at an apartment, a really nice place to begin your life together. And you'll look back on that day with fondness. But you may also look at a house you can rent together and it'll give you a nice place to start. Or maybe he'll even be able to buy a house and bring his bride to that place. But he'll provide a place for her to live. None of that was true in Jesus' day. In Jesus' day, the husband had to build a place for his bride and for his family to come. He had to build a place for his family to start. Now, I may have to disappoint some of you a little, but the word that is translated mansions, that's not really the word that Jesus was using. It's not a picture of rolling hills and big houses and room to roam. Really what it means is just dwelling place. I will provide you with a dwelling place. Because it's not so much about the size or the beauty of the house. It is that it is home. It is the place where you belong. I will go and prepare a home for you. But it gets even better. What he did is he would return to his father's house, and that's where he would begin. He would begin to build an addition onto his father's home, a place for he and his family to live, just as his father had done in the generation before him. The idea was not that we get married and then we're apart from everybody else. It was we get married and then we become a part of a bigger family. And we come together, and when we're married into a family that's going to surround us and love us and encourage us and support us. And when he was finished building that addition onto his father's house, then he would return to claim his bride. Then he had earned the right for the wedding to proceed. This is a wonderful thing about married life. Prior to getting married, all of the focus is on the attention. All the attention is focused on the wedding. I'm sorry. See, I get nervous even thinking about them. The day I got married was the most joyful day in my life, and the day I was scared, more scared than any other time. Prior to the marriage, all of the focus is on the wedding. Where's it going to be? What's it going to look like? What are we going to wear? How are we going to decorate? What's the wedding going to be like? And I have said to so many young men over the years, a girl begins to plan her wedding from the time she's about 3 years old. And all her life long, she's thinking about that wedding. And she really doesn't care what just popped into your mind. But here's the thing. The wedding comes and the wedding goes. But then the real life begins. It's only after the wedding that you truly begin to realize the priority has always been the marriage. It's not really about that one event. It's about what happens for years to come after that is done. And God calls men and women to come together to build a home. Just as Jesus said, I go to prepare a place for you. Just as in Jesus' day, a bridegroom would go home and build that place where his bride would live, where his family would grow. We're still called to do that today. As men and women committed to one another, we are called to build a home. So how do you build that home? Well, this home is to be built intentionally. One thing is true about a home, it constantly has to be repaired and improved. I was standing outside in my front yard talking to my next door neighbor the other day, and he was talking about the sod that he was laying in the back of his house, and I was talking about the roof we just had to be replaced at our house, and we were talking about all the things we have going on, and I finally said, Trevor, you know, you start out thinking you own a house and find out that it really owns you, don't you? Because there's constantly something that has to be done. What happens if you move into a house and you put your things down and you do nothing for the next 30 years? The house begins to fall down, doesn't it? Paint begins to flake off. Things begin to break down. Repairs need to be made, but you're neglecting them. And before long, if you wait 30 years and you do nothing, then what you look at and what you own is not what you want to have. And the same thing is true of building a marriage. You just can't set it down and do nothing. You can't say, okay, we planned this, we had the wedding, we've moved into the house, now I'm done with that, and do nothing. There are constantly things that need to be changed, things that need to be adjusted, things that need to be improved. There are times when you have to give attention to one part of your marriage, and there are times when you have to give attention to something else. There are times when it's all about what's going on in your home financially. There are times when it's all about what's going on in your home socially. There are times when it's about what's going on in your home ethically. There are times when you just have to stop and say, okay, who are we? What are we trying to do? Who are we trying to be? Because you have to build your home intentionally. This home is also to be built sacrificially. It is never to be taken for granted. You want a recipe for a miserable home? Let me give it to you. A recipe for a miserable marriage is, what are you going to do for me next? That's it. A recipe for a miserable marriage is, what are you going to do for me? Recipe for a thriving marriage? What can I do for you? See, it's all about sacrificial giving and receiving. It's about everybody looking out for everybody else. For a man to see what he can do to please his bride. For a bride to wonder, what can I do to please my groom? How can I take care of you? This home is to be built spiritually. Don't think you can do this apart from the Lord. If you're going to build a strong, lasting marriage, it's going to have to find its foundations in Christ. There's nowhere else to turn. Everything else is going to prove too shallow and too superficial and too temporary to stand the test and the challenges of time. It has to be built spiritually. Let me go a little bit further with that, and let me be politically incorrect about it, okay? And in a godly marriage, it is a man's role to be the spiritual leader. Too many homes I see struggling because a husband says to his wife, hey, you take the kids to church, I'll stay home today. Or he says to his wife, look, you take care of the spiritual life of us as a couple. You do the praying, you do the Bible studying, you do all of that stuff, because I don't do those things. The Bible says it is a man's job to lead his family spiritually. It is a man's job to be the one who steps out front and leads the way. That's part of how you build your home. Now, ladies, that doesn't mean that I think you just sit back and let him lead the way, because it's a partnership, and everybody provides spiritually. And everybody has to be part of this thing of we're serving Christ together. But men, lead the way. Lead the way. That's God's plan. A true home is one like Jesus described. It is vitally connected to the Lord. In my Father's house, where I have built a home, connected to Him, where He will always be present, I have created you a home. And He always blesses a couple who understand that their home is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. After the season of preparation comes the season of celebration, a time of celebration. Jesus said, "And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself." That's the wedding. When the bridegroom has everything ready, when the house is prepared, when it's time to move forward, then he returned to celebrate the wedding. He came and he said, "There's nothing in the way now. We can get married." That happens a lot these days. We don't quite say it that way. We may say it like, "Okay, I've got enough money saved now. We can get married. Okay, I finished my degree. We can get married. Okay, everything's ready now. We can get married." But there comes that time when you know. And Jesus said, "I go to prepare a place for you, the heavenly bridegroom. I will return and I will receive you to myself, and I'm going to bring you home to where you belong." It was a season of joy, a season of celebration, and it was a season of triumph. They had done everything necessary to be married to one another. No one could deny them the ability to be husband and wife. It was time for the wedding celebration. And today we're called to celebrate marriage. Yes, the marriage, a wedding ceremony where family and friends gather to witness two people joining their lives together in Christian marriage. But more than that, as they take joy in the days and the years to come. It's one of the reasons I so much like the idea that we describe church as church family, because this is that place where family forms itself. It's been fun for me over the last couple of years to learn how many of you all met one another here at church and married each other. That's pretty fun. That's pretty exciting. But more than that, to watch some of you who have begun your marriage together and have a church family that loves you and cares about you and wants to see you grow. We celebrate it together. No earthly relationship is to mean more than your marriage. You rejoice in one another. You invest in one another. You give the time, the attention, the affection that has to be given. You bless one another in words and actions. In fact, I want to tell you, just because I'm moving ahead, that's one of the most important things any of us can do within our families, whether you're talking about your husband or your wife or your children, is to give the gift of a blessing. And I'm going to do a whole sermon around that in a few weeks. And you continually reaffirm your commitment to one another. Let me tell you something this morning. I love my church. I'm so glad to be your pastor. I count it a privilege every day. And I love my kids. I tell you what, I know y'all have great kids, but mine are greater. And I don't even have grandchildren yet. But the greatest pure pleasure of my life is being married to that woman right there. And Judith and I have been married for 33 years, and I pray we get 33 more, because I never made a better decision in my life than to marry my wife, whose birthday is Tuesday, by the way, and I remember that, in front of you all. It's kind of funny. We were talking the other day because, you know, I celebrate my 37th birthday once a year and have for a little while now. And Judith asked me a while back, she said, well, let me just ask you this. If you're 37, then how old am I going to be? And I said, 38. She didn't love me as much that day. I really do count that, though. You know what I look for more than anything? Time to spend with my wife. Just things we can do together, the two of us. They don't have to be big things. They don't have to be expensive things or exciting things. Although she would tell you on some of those days where we go from shop to shop, or those places that have doodads and nothing for me to look at, Judah says, I walk behind her and I say the same thing at every counter, every stop. You know what I say? There's that celebration of being married together. I need to tell you, if I had to do it all over again, I would pick you. Thank you. I was waiting to see what was going to happen. And then following the wedding, the couple moved into their home for a lifetime of covenant marriage. Jesus said in John 14:3 that where I am, there you may be also. A marriage is meant to join a man and a woman who will love one another for the journey of a lifetime. Where I am, that's where I want you to be. When Judith and I had our wedding, we wrote the vows together that we repeated to one another. And among the words of those vows were these: and whatever life brings, we will face it together. Wherever God leads, we will go there as one. And we've pretty much been faithful to those vows over the years. That's God's plan for a Christian marriage, for it to go the distance. That you're committed to spending a lifetime together. And wherever one is, the other's going to be present as well. I remember a story I love. I've probably told it before, but it's too good not to tell it again. Of a couple that had a huge fight, because everybody does. I mean, maybe except for you, but the rest of us have those big arguments. And finally, she got so mad, she stormed upstairs and she pulled her suitcase out from under the bed and began flinging things into it. And a few minutes passed and her husband came up and he jerked his suitcase out from under the bed and he started flinging his stuff in his. And she looked at him and she said, well, where do you think you're going? And he looked at her and said, wherever you are. That's kind of the way it's supposed to be, isn't it? That's the way it's supposed to be. Sometimes it's easy. Sometimes it's tough. But there's no greater incentive to grow a godly marriage than to realize you're going to live with one another for better or for worse. We're going to be together from now on. So let's make it good. Make cultivating a growing marriage your first priority after your relationship with Jesus. And that leads me to my final point this morning. In John 14, 1 through 3, Jesus used the image of a bridegroom and his bride, but he used it to describe the relationship between himself and the people who belong to him. And we need to get back and remember that as the very most important thing of all. It is he who declared his commitment. Believe in God, believe also in me. You can trust me, I will keep my word. It is he who made a promise. I go to prepare a place for you. And he did when he rose from the grave. It is he who has promised to return. I will come again and receive you to myself. The important thing about the second coming is not that Jesus is coming back. The most important thing about the second coming is Jesus is coming back for his own. He is coming to receive us to himself. It is he who has promised us an eternal home in heaven, that where I am, there you may be also. Everything that we've talked about between a bridegroom and a bride this morning applies a thousandfold and more to our relationship with Jesus. He's the one who has said, I have chosen you as a part of my eternal bride. I want you to belong to me. I make a commitment to you. If you trust me, I will save you. If you follow me, I will guide you. If you depend upon me, the day will come when you will be with me in heaven. I'm coming back for my own. And you will forever be with the Lord. And in verse 6, Jesus says what we need to know more than anything in the world. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father except by me. Jesus is the one way to eternal life. Jesus is the one hope we have for heaven. Jesus is the only way our lives can be right with God. He's chosen you. He's invited you. He's prepared a place for you. All you have to do is come through faith in Jesus. And maybe that's what you need to do today. Maybe you're here in this congregation and you've never received Jesus as personal Savior and Lord. There's never been that moment when you have said to Him, come into my heart. I want to change me from inside out. I want you to forgive me of my sins. I want you to restore me. I want you to help me to be faithful to you. Maybe today when we stand and sing our invitation, that's your opportunity to come forward and give your life to Jesus for the first time. Or maybe you're here. Maybe you're even here as a couple. And you're thinking, we so much need a place, a church family, where we can plant our lives and we can grow spiritually and we can follow Christ together. And today, we want to come and we want to become a part of what God is doing at First Baptist. Maybe there's a decision you need to make in your own heart of hearts, one where you need to talk to myself or you need to talk to Rich. Maybe one where you need to use the altar and talk to the Lord. Maybe something you need to do by yourself. Maybe something you need to do together as a couple. Maybe God's telling you something special this morning. If He is, then we want you to come. Just a second, we're going to be standing. We're going to sing an invitation hymn. I'm going to be here. Rich is going to be here. We would love to meet you and help you make that decision that could change eternity. Do you need to come? Let's stand together. Let's sing.